October 26, 2017, at 5:03 p.m. Roll call, please, Micah.
Board Member Haddock?
Yes, present.
Board Member Lewis?
Here.
Board Member Spurrier?
Present.
Chairman Francis?
Here.
City Attorney Arnold?
Here.
Development Services Director Fleet?
Here. The City Manager might be joining us a little bit later. Not sure.
Vice Chairman Gaul is absent. And City Attorney City Manager Judd is absent.
Yeah, she might be joining us in a little bit.
We still have to say it.
Yeah.
Chairman Francis, you have a quorum.
Thank you. I'm assuming that the minutes for our last meeting we'll have next month.
Okay. We're still, we appreciate you working through the transition. As Ms. Kimberly's been kind of, in the last meeting before she was like transitioning was our very long meeting. It was back in May, but anyway, so she's been working on those minutes, and then we're transitioning between Micah and Kimberly to get them right. So we'll catch up, but we're there. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We don't have anything for public hearing tonight, but on the board business, the first thing we have is board member training. Janice, what do you have for us?
Thank you. You should have gotten your packet. A couple things. First of all, I have this book that I think we've made up for everybody, and I'm not going to go over it. This took... Ms. Francis and I spent a whole day almost going through this book, and it's got a lot of information, and so read it, go through it. You got any questions, it's a general planning and zoning training that the American Planning Association kind of puts together with attorneys, and actually the one we went with Gene Bowles, who's a planner, and an attorney from South Florida did it. So I learn every time I go through one of those. I think Ms. Francis, and I appreciate the time. So they're going to have them various times during the year. So if there's another opportunity that comes up that's someplace in this area, and I'll give you the board members an opportunity. But in the meantime, I think we've talked about that at these meetings when we don't have anything per se, instead of not having a meeting, we decided to do some training and go over it, because actually when I looked at the last time we had done this, I know Ms. Spurrier and I think Ms. Haddock and Mr. Lewis, but Ms. Francis wasn't on, and neither is Mr. Goss. So
I don't remember that.
And then maybe you weren't even on.
Yeah.
So I don't remember the date. It could have been whatever. Even if we've done it, it's always a good refresher. You learn things. You have different questions, and things are getting busy here. Things are happening, and so it's a good refresher also. So we're going to go through this short PowerPoint between Jim and myself to kind of go over something, some examples. I don't know what happened to our clock, so I'll kind of let me know when it's close to 6 if we have, so that, you know, because we can continue at another meeting, because we will have action items at your next meeting. I always know what's coming up because of my cutoff dates for your next meeting, but.
You pretty well going to be planning following the book.
Really the PowerPoint more than the book, so, and those issues, yeah. So anyway, so if you want to go to the first slide, and Jim and I are going to kind of be tag teaming a little bit more the legal issues he's going to be going through. All right, you want to go to the next slide? Can you advance it? Is it working? Okay, so probably back in 2000-ish, the city used to have a whole bunch of different boards, and unfortunately developers would have to go to various boards to get through reviews, to get their site plan approved. And so when we redid the code in around 2000, we looked at making this, and some people called it like a super board, but combining the various reviews, various boards into one board, because we were having issues getting quorums at some of the board, getting people to come to the, get nominees, et cetera. And it really wasn't fair to the developer, because you might get one board approve it and then another board not approve it, and they had to come back to that board, and development would take a lot longer. So basically, your rule is you've got kind of various reviews. So it's development review or the site plan review for projects that are over an acre or 10,000 square feet. And that we picked that looking at what we thought was considered kind of a major development in the city. All those site plans have to come to you so you can look at it. And we've had, that's why we had the visual FX of Valancourt. You provide, after staff provides a technical review, you provide it at a public forum, allows you to review it as well as the public to weigh in if they've got issues or not. So that's been this board's review. You've had that responsibility as long as I've been around, and probably Jim could say even longer, I mean, because he's been with the city a long time. The next one of your responsibilities is comprehensive plan update and amendments. The state statute, Chapter 163, requires that every local government designate what they call an LPA, local planning agency, to review comprehensive plan amendments, changes, updates, et cetera. And the council has to, they can appoint themselves as that LPA or appoint another board. City Council in Green Cove Springs appointed the Planning and Zoning Board as their LPA. It allows you to look at it in more detail. And the reason the state has for these, the LPA, is so that you look at something a little bit more in detail. As you know, now, most of you have all been to city council meetings. They have a lot to look at. This way you can spend, you know, more time on these issues, more time on the comp plan, and you make a recommend, and then all your, as required by state statutes and our city's charter, you also review the, you make a recommendation to council on those issues. The other thing, it's a tree board, which we are a tree city for 28 years. One of the requirements is that we have a tree board that looks at trees. And we incorporate in a lot of our recommendations for tree mitigation and the landscape ordinance implementation as part of our site plan review. So we felt, like I said, back in 2000, there made no sense for somebody to have to go to the tree board to talk about removing trees for development and then come back to you as a planning and zoning board to look at the overall site plan. So as part of your review of site plan, you're looking at trees that are being cut down in order to allow for development. Also is the Recreation Advisory Board, which is required when we want to get extra points, is the best way of saying it, for grants, for any recreation-related grants, of the FRDA, the FRDA Recreation Development Grant, the Land and Water Conservation. And we felt that instead of creating another board, the council felt that this board, it was another something good that it kind of goes with planning and long-range planning. And the last was the variance board. And that used to be a separate board at some point in time. This way, we do it all as you look at it as part of a site plan or you look at it as part of a development review. So you kind of are a super board in some places, but I think it's worked well. You also, the council has given you the authority for special exceptions that you are the, you get, and both for variances. You are you're not a recommending board. You are the final board unless they appeal it to the council. So those are your responsibilities that are kind of major. Next slide. Okay, ethical issues. I'm going to let Jim, do you want to talk about this a little bit?
Yeah, I could talk about that a little bit. Obviously, if you ever feel you have a conflict of interest, you can discuss that. You should discuss that at the meeting and try to make that decision. I'll be happy to help with that respect. You have to actually make the decision yourself. I can't make it for you as to whether or not you believe that you might have some sort of a conflict of interest or something in a controversy. The law basically says if there's a decision that you're looking to make and the outcome of that could inure to your specific and special private gain or loss, then you're prohibited from partaking in that decision. And you just disclose that. We have forms that we use, and you disclose it on the record. You fill out the forms and so forth, and we'll provide those to you. It doesn't happen often. You know, examples might mean if you had a business next door to the thing that was being rezoned or something, and it was, you know, really could make a big difference in your business or something, that might be some sort of a conflict of interest. You could have someone who maybe is involved in the issue, and maybe your partners with them in some of the business. That comes up sometimes on the city council. Mr. Royal has got business, like even with my wife, their business in real estate, and he has to avoid voting on something that might have to do with me. and on and on. I mean, he has business interests with other people, and so the more tentacles you have out there in the community, and the more land that you might own, things of that sort, it might bring up a conflict of interest. It doesn't happen very often, but it does happen. But if you have any questions about it, I'm happy to confer with you about it and advise you. But again, the final decision, you know, is really up to you. So if you have any questions about that particular thing, then I'll be happy to address that further with you, or now, or whenever.
And you're required to vote unless you do have a conflict of interest, correct me, right? You can't say I'm abstaining. That's not unless you have a conflict of interest.
You can't abstain from voting. The law prohibits you from abstaining from voting. I know you see Congress from time to time where they'll simply say, I forget the exact phrase they use, can't think of what it is because we don't do it. They just refrain from voting on something, but they don't vote yay or nay, or even voice a conflict. They just decide not to vote, and there's some fancy way they say it. We don't do that. You are required to vote. That is your job, to vote, unless you have a specific conflict of interest. And that is different. And I know even on this board, I know that maybe one or more of y'all, through the years, I've heard one or more of the board members say, I really want to vote on that one. You know, that's just, you know, maybe that's too controversial, or it's too whatever, or, you know, maybe I might have a conflict of interest, when you really don't. It's just, maybe it is a neighbor, you know, and you hate to vote, but you have to, you know. It's the other things that aren't a conflict of interest is when the matter is dealing with a large segment of the community, the population. For instance, things like taxes. Well, obviously those all impact us personally, don't they? So if you vote to lower or increase taxes or whatever, you may be helping yourself or helping your business or helping the land that you own if you vote to lower ad valorem taxes. But that's been held by the courts not to be any type of a conflict of interest because it's broad enough, such as Sarah lives at Magnolia Point. So can she vote on Magnolia Point issues? Because that's a community all unto itself, although it's obviously a very big part of Green Cove. And the answer is, of course, yes, because it's such a big spectrum. And sometimes that could even be small, much smaller than that, and just kind of look at each one to see. But basically, if it's something that affects, you know, a great number of people or a good number of people, then it's not really deemed to be a conflict of interest. So, then again, feel free to jump in, because I know this is sort of informal today. The best thing I can tell you about gifts or favors, don't take any. Don't do it. Don't take any. Don't do any. Don't do any favors. Don't accept any favors. Don't accept any gifts. There are some requirements if it's very small and so forth. But my advice to councils and to planning and zoning board members is just don't take any gifts from anybody. Don't do anything because you never know. You never know when somebody's going to be coming in front of you and you don't even know it yet. It could be a month or two out or something, and somebody offers to do something, and maybe you've heard it's coming up or something. The best thing to do while you're in office is just not to accept gifts from anybody that you think could be related to any issue, you know, that would come in front of the city. So it's pretty easy to do that, and if you take that advice, you're never going to have a problem. I can remember in 40 plus years, it's just come up very, very rarely where somebody maybe has accepted a football ticket or something and, you know, they shouldn't have done it. Some of the law deals with intent and so forth. You're deemed to know the law, but the best thing to do is just not to get involved in that at all.
Yes, I have a question. What about a cup of coffee? And I'll tell you
what
I asked.
A what?
Have a cup of coffee.
That's probably all right.
Go further than that. After the family had already been in front of the board and the decision already passed and everything, so after which, and conversing with the family, well, come on by anytime and stop by and have a cup of coffee, just give me a call and come by and have a cup of coffee.
Avoid the appearance of impropriety. That's the key phrase, man. You're shaking her head. She knows exactly what I mean by that. You kind of can feel it. You already felt it just by raising it. You know what I'm saying? You can. We all know what a little pressure feels like, or a little bit of somebody puts their arm around you and goes, let me talk to you about my issue a little bit. Oh, and by the way, come on by and I'll buy you a drink at the so-and-so, or whatever. I'll buy you some coffee or dinner. That's where you can kind of get pulled a little bit. You just politely just decline. That's all you got to do, you know.
And we're a small town, so if somebody sees you having coffee with this person, and then there's, you know, even though you weren't talking about it, it could be. I remember I have to take a ethics class every year with my to keep my ASVP, and they gave an example one time, like with football tickets, as Jim mentioned. They said, well, what if I just got them at you know, cost? You know, they didn't charge me. They said, yeah, but what if I paid for them? Is it all right if, you know, no, obviously you don't want to take them, but what if I paid for them? They said, yeah, but what if it's a Florida-Georgia game and everybody's paying, you go on StubHub or whatever, and people are paying over face value, but they're giving to you at face value. Again, you know, it's just better not to do it, and because it's the perception of somebody else thinking what you might or might not be doing.
I've had a council member or two through the years I know have probably accepted football tickets and maybe sat in a skybox when they shouldn't have or whatever. It's just wrong, and you can get in trouble doing it, and, you know, and I would advise them not to do it, and then I don't know whether they do it or not after that because I don't follow people around. It's not my job to do that. I just tell you, you can get in trouble, you know, just like violating the Sunshine Law and things of that sort. We have been very, very fortunate in this town not to have had that happen very often and not to have council members or board members get in trouble through the years. It's only happened in my 40 years, it's only happened really one time other than the grand jury time when we had some bad things going on. But that was very early in my career. But since then, it's only been a couple of times, and those dealt with Sunshine Law, you know, violations where people were talking about some different things and they shouldn't have been, and they knew it. You know. Anyway, if you have any questions about it or if you feel any pressure from anybody, just pick the phone up and call me. That's what I'm there for. I don't mind talking to any council member. Y'all have probably all called me, and if you hadn't, you're welcome to, and I'm happy to answer any of your questions.
I was going to say, I know you've done it, but every July, by July 1st of every year, as long as you're on the, you have to do a form. I have to do one. I think, Danielle, you have to do one. I think Jim does. Because they have to make sure that nobody's paying us off is paying you off. I mean, you know, but these are state-required ethical forms that are required by the state of Florida. That they've got specific boards and specific offices that are appointed, council people, that are specific offices that you hold within a city that you have to do those forms. And I think you have to do. I know you all have been on the board long enough. We try it as part of your new member packet. We give you a form, and then once you file it once, you get it every year from the supervisor of elections. And if you can have penalties if you don't send those in.
Don't
the service.
Be late on those forms. They'll send you a reminder probably, but just really, and we may follow up on it internally. I don't know that.
So. We usually get an email, and usually I will call you, and you guys, we didn't get one this year, so y'all were good and did it by July 1st, but yeah, and I'm sorry. Danielle?
So the only thing I was going to add is, you know, usually around the holidays, we'll get all kinds of baskets, and they help just say City Hall will have my name on them or something, so what I do is I just put them in a break room or something,
Things like that are pretty harmless. That's going to happen. People anonymously are going to give you things from time to time, too. It's just when you feel a little twinge of, should I do that or not? That's when you got to think. Right then. You'll know it. I mean, you know, you will. You will. I mean, it could be not this. It could be any club you're in, any organization. You're in many. And you know when somebody's trying to give you a little pressure to do something or whatever. And that's where in public life it's just different than it is in private life. In private life, you can... You know, my father-in-law was in the chicken business and way up in the chicken business at one time, and he used to tell me about taking people on hunting and fishing trips and spending $100,000, you know, taking people all over the place. But he would get million-dollar orders in return. And so that's the way private business has always pretty much worked. But public is certainly different, and you see people getting in trouble. You read about them in the newspaper, and we just don't ever want to be one of those people. I certainly don't, and I don't want it for anybody. And, like I said,
unfortunately, you're always guilty in the public eyes when the subject comes up.
In the public sector, that's, you're under the spotlight or the microscope, whatever you want to call it, and,
Guilty to proven innocent.
You're exactly. It'll feel that way, I promise you. Danielle knows it'll feel that way.
Yeah. Any questions on that, on the ethical issues? Okay,
we can talk about, I can do the next one.
Yeah.
in my sleep, of course.
Right.
Ex parte communications are, I guess that's an old Latin phrase, but if you look it up in Black's Dictionary, it means just one side of a controversy, basically, is somebody's only getting one side or only hearing one side without any kind of notice to the other side. I'll give you the judicial example. When I go to court several times a month, I'll have a matter, could be a divorce, could be whatever, and it's been resolved, and you're down to having a consent final judgment entered by the judge, and he just needs to hear somebody's name, and is the marriage really over? Is that your signature? Is that your agreement? Yes, it is. Your Honor, here it is. Thank you very much. He signs it, and there'll be a waiver of any kind of a hearing signed by the other side, and so the judge lets you come to him during what they call ex parte time or ex parte hours. All judges typically have that. Could be every morning from 8 to 8:15, or it could be five times a month. It's different, unfortunately, it's different with every judge, and they change it all the time, too. So sometimes I get over there with my client, and the judge doesn't even have ex parte, even on his calendar it may say he does. So that means that I'm there without the other side, without notice to the other side, but in those situations, that has been waived. In the political arena, you're dealing with it in quasi-judicial forums that you have. I say that's like similar to court. It's not quite the decorum that court has to have. It doesn't have the exact same strictness of due process that court does, but it does. We do have to have basic due process, which is, and you're going to, that's on here later too, is just a notice of opportunity, a notice of hearings, a notice of the issue to affected parties, as well as the right, the absolute right to be able to be heard on that. What happens with ex parte communications are when you have an issue coming before you, especially, again, quasi-judicial zoning, things of that sort, then you are lobbied, if for lack of a better word, because that's kind of what ex parte is. That's just really the old-fashioned lobbying. You know, lobbying's gone on forever. It's really frowned upon by the courts because it's outside of the hearing that you're conducting. Typically, it would obviously be before the hearing, and somebody has called you or called a city council person, and, hey, let me bend your ear. Let me tell you why you need to vote this way on this issue, because everybody in town's upset about it, and you need to know that. And, by the way, when you run for election next time, we're going to all have to vote against you if you don't go our way. You have to actually now, if you are going to accept those, I say, lobbying efforts, and some of them are very well intended. They maybe don't want to come to the meeting or whatever, or don't want to be on TV, and so they're going to call you ahead of time. Some lawyers, including some of the treatises that I have, some of the seminars that I go to, the one I just went to on local government law in that one section, the author of that section of the seminar says flatly, I recommend to my municipal and county clients that they just avoid all ex parte communications at all, because you are not required at all to talk to anybody about an issue coming before you before that issue gets to you. You're not required to do that. Judges don't do that. They never do that. They're not allowed to do it. You are. There's a special law in Florida that allows you to do it, but you don't have to, and I've said that since that law was changed many years ago. You're not required to do it. But as Janice says, we're a small town, and you know, somebody in the church calls you, and they go, let me bend your ear about this issue. What do you do? And you can very politely just say, on the advice of my attorney, or I just think I'd rather wait and hear the case when it's presented so I can make my decision based on the record as presented. It's perfectly okay to do that. I find through the years that most people on boards and city councils tend to talk to people when they call them, because they're their constituents, and again, we're a small town. So you're probably going to talk to your neighbors and your friends if they call you. If it's a conversation of substance about the issue, in other words, if it's more than, you know, hey, I just wanted to call you about something that's coming up, and, you know, just wanted to hear what you had to say, that is your point of view, and then they didn't get into anything else, I don't know that that's worthy of throwing out, because really that's you telling them how maybe you feel about it, not them lobbying you so much, but them asking you. But likely they're telling you their opinion, and they're telling you, you know, I got a petition, I got neighbors, I got this, I got that, here's why I'm against it, the churches are all against it, or whatever it may be. you do have to disclose that at the meeting, and I say you should disclose, the law doesn't say exactly when to disclose it except before a decision is made. I just always say, you know, do it before the public hearing starts, and that way everybody that comes to the mic gets an opportunity to give you their side of the story and to refute or expand on or agree with whatever your conversations might have been outside of here or during ex parte communication. And so as long as you do that, yeah, go ahead.
I've been to council meetings before, and a council member has said, well, my phone's been ringing off the hook when people call me about this issue. But they don't mention who.
It's only dealing with land use and zoning. If it's tax, increased taxes, if it's, I mean, all the other issues. Am I correct?
It's only land and zoning? Because it's on the council agenda every
The ex parte disclosure.
Yeah, the bottom.
Yeah.
I mean, it's on every agenda.
It is, but
that's,
it doesn't apply.
That's our agenda.
It does not apply
to.
Yeah, it doesn't apply. It only applies to typically the quasi-judicial hearings, which are your zoning, your planning, and all that sort of stuff. That's typically what it would apply
to. It doesn't apply to the other issues that the council might be discussing.
Every business decision.
And the other council?
The law related to ex parte communication has to do with the quasi-judicial is when you're sitting as quasi-judicial, which has to do with rezoning, exceptions, variances, et cetera.
If the city council was voting on the budget or voting on a capital expenditure of $5 million or a bond issue or whatever, you know, there really isn't any requirement to disclose ex parte communications on that. There really isn't. I think you'd probably you'd be there all night if they had to disclose every conversation about every issue of everything on there, and so the law doesn't require that.
Only planning and zoning.
Seems like it ought to, but it really doesn't, you know.
It's because there were some cases, and Jim and I laugh, as Schneider and Jennings, they came out a while ago, and the court kind of defined that these issues, came up with quasi-judicial hearings and required the ex parte communication.
And you just really, really do need to disclose. If it came out later, you didn't disclose, somebody could attack the decision of the board or something. That's never happened here, and it rarely happens, but it has happened. It has happened in the court, so you don't want to do that. So just always disclose if you have any substantive conversation. If it's more, you know, if it's, hey, you're going to be there tonight, I'm going to be there, I just want to let you know I'm going to be there on that issue. This is very important to the community, so I'm going to be there. I want you to be there now, okay? And if that's all it is, that's really not of substance, and nobody, how would anybody respond to that anyway? But if they ask, you know, what are you going to do on it? Well, I hope you wouldn't tell them. I hope you'd wait until after you've heard all the evidence before you make a decision, because, again, it'd be like calling a judge ahead of time. Judge, how are you going to handle this case? How are you going to rule on this case? That'd be nice to do if I was the lawyer in the case, but I can't do it. So I tell you the obvious, and that is don't make your decisions ahead of time. Never do that if you can help it, but because you're really a judge and a jury sitting up here. You're making pretty serious decisions sometimes, very, very serious decisions. And, you know, if you just treat them as serious, as I'm sure y'all are already doing, then make your decision up after hearing everything and live with your decision and go on. That's what you do.
And the reason is that why this whole lawsuit started that required all these requires for ex parte communication is people were coming to planning and zoning board or city council meeting, and they were hearing one side of the story, whichever side of the story, but one side. And then when they came to the hearing, they already made up their mind or they didn't hear anything. At least if the whole idea of the ex parte, which is why Jim says it's good, we do it at the beginning of the hearing, if you say, well, I heard that Mrs. Smith told me that they're going to paint this chartreuse green or something, and that's why I'm against it. Well, it gives the opportunity for the applicant to say, no, I never did that, I'm not doing that, you know, whatever. I mean, that's an example. But it's just that, but if they don't know that, and so you've made a decision because you've heard this piece of information that's correct or incorrect, they can't, either side can't respond. It's the same thing if the applicant comes to you and says, I'm going to do all this. You know, okay, I'm fine if you do all that, I'm for your item. Well, the neighbors don't know that that's what that they've agreed to. So that's why it's for each side to be able to refute what maybe was heard by somebody else. And that's why you disclose it, and they can either say yes or no, that's not correct.
We also, there's also one other thing you'll see on the bottom. I guess it's on the bottom of our agendas too, about let's see, public participation. There's another statute, 286-0114. I don't have any of these statutes numbers memorized except for a handful, believe me. That's another one where people, you know, get to come address you on any issues of any kind of substance, not necessarily on voting on the minutes or something, although I guess they probably could do that too. But we've always been flexible in Green Cove. As long as I've been here, we've been flexible to let anybody speak on just about anything ad nauseum sometimes, right? Is that the proper phrase? Okay. I think we know what I mean. So we were doing that long before the legislature said, oh, by the way, everybody has a right to speak on just about any proposition, I think is the word in the statute, before you make your vote. If they want to speak on it, they, by golly, they can speak on it. And so, again, we were already doing that anyway, and y'all have been doing that forever. If somebody came in here right now and wanted to speak, you let them speak right now, probably, right? We let them do it sometimes in the middle of motions, and we shouldn't, but we do. And I think it's, you know, again, looking at how the city has gone for the past decades, it's, I think it's always better to let people get it out, get it off their chest or whatever, however you want to call it, and let them have their say. And most people can, you know, judges have told me that many, many times, you know, when we would have conversations after something, and they would, you know, and I'd say, Judge, why in the world would you let that go on forever and ever? That might be 6 months after something. The judge would say, I just, Jim, sometimes it's just better to let them all have their peace. I kind of knew where I was going, and so I just let them all have their peace, and then I made my ruling. And that's kind of the way y'all got to do it, too. Sometimes they'll go on a little longer than you want them to. You can limit them to the minutes and all, but anyway, let me hush for a minute. We'll be here till midnight.
Okay, next slide. it's kind of, Jim touched on due process.
Yeah.
We're here to correct, to create a record. We have been lucky, Jim and I always joke, we've been working together both as when I was a consultant, as now as a city employee. Our goal is to keep you all out of court and keep the city out of court. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, we are very fortunate because I used to be involved in a lot of lawsuits. The city of Jacksonville got sued so many times that they pay, this is the honest truth, they pay for a court reporter at every one of their planning and zoning and their land use there with the city council. We're all under oath, and she has for years, because basically was caught, the city was losing so much money and going to court because they didn't have a create record. Because if you look on every one of our, it talks about if you want to create a verbatim, you have to bring somebody. Well, that city of Jacksonville made that decision and that they would do it themselves. But because the minutes that we create it are not verbatim. They're not like a court reporter. But they do provide a record, and they limit challenges. One of the things, and when Ms. Francis and I were at a hearing, that became, you know, that, I know people get a pain like when they start talking from the audience, and you say, "Please come forward," and that's because it's if for some reason it had to be transcribed later, you've got that the recording, or sometimes people want to listen to the recording. Well, what happened? We'll go back and listen to the recording. So it helps to have it. And also, and this was came up at our training, that the talking among board members, even if you're talking not on anything substantial, people in the audience think you are. Again, it's that perception. So, like, the attorney that was doing the training says, she tells her board members, don't talk to each other. And, like, don't slip notes to each other, even if it's like, what do you want for dinner tonight? Or, hey, you want to go out for dinner after the meeting? Which, you know, obviously you can. There's not, you know, you can, but that,
I've actually told council people that in the past. You'll see sometimes they'll reach over and, like, kind of whispering to one another and everything. It is that perception out there because they don't know what they're saying, and it could be so innocent, but you really are better off not doing it. I know that puts a straight jacket on you. You feel like, my God, I can't even say how you look nice or whatever, where you're going to dinner after that, you know. But, yeah, I mean, strictly you shouldn't be giving the public the feeling that somehow they're being left out of the conversation. And, you know, Jacksonville got in trouble by doing what the cell phones, you know, they, I forget what the vote was. Somebody was lobbying them in the middle of a doggone meeting on their phones and stuff, and I forget the exact controversy, but I'm sure y'all saw it in the paper. And, yeah, you can get in trouble doing all of that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
The due process thing, as I said earlier, is just what we have. I mean, we have the opportunity to be heard. We have notice to everybody, different notices for different kinds of things. And, you know, we certainly strive to do all of that by the law and strictly follow it. And, again, we're giving everybody the opportunity to be heard. And as long as you do that, you know, you're meeting the minimum due process. So, you know, we're not going to get challenged on any of that. We're good there.
And usually when I've been involved in lawsuits, what the judge will send it back down is for some procedural reason. Mm-hmm. Not really. They can't argue. The judge won't come back and say, no, I think it should have been resigned or not. They'll find some procedural reason to send it back to the P&Z or the council, and so then start the process over again. So,
any other questions about the due process part?
Because you're acting as a quasi-judicial. We keep using that word, but that's what it is. It's you are kind of like a judge, so you have to have that same process. The other thing that's interesting is if somebody applies for rezoning and land use, even if you voted 5-0 against it and the council voted 5-0 on the first reading, it has to get completed through the second and final reading, so they have the ability to go to court and file suit if they want it. Unlike other normal ordinances that we have.
City-generated
ordinances that they usually go at first reading. If you can't, they can't get three votes on the council, well, there's no reason to advertise second and final. You're not going to get anywhere. Land use decisions, future land use map, comprehensive plan amendments, or rezonings have to go through to the end so that it gives the applicant a chance to challenge.
I didn't mention one other thing under ex parte, and that just happened this past week where somebody sent in, I think, did they send you something in writing or something? I forget, one of the meetings. Anyway, somebody sent something in writing. If that happens.
Yeah, okay. And there was the petition.
Interestingly, she's not required to divulge ex parte communications to us because we're not the decision maker. So we're not required to do that. If we wanted to divulge, like Danielle, nothing wrong with divulging because she's putting it on the record and anybody can say, well, that's what she said when she called you, Ms. Judd, but let me tell you the real story or whatever it might be. So that's the other thing. And so if there is something written, you just make that a part of the record. If somebody writes a letter into the board or whatever, you know, you just make it part of the record.
There's some communities that are, and like Jacksonville, because they have so many hearings, like they will, their general counsel's offices said they throw those out because, and I think St. John's County is the same way, if you can't cross-examine the person that's providing competent,
yeah,
substantial evidence, which is what you're supposed to be listening for, then they tell you you should not listen to it, or you should put very little weight onto that information.
It really goes to the weight of that type of evidence coming to you. I mean, I think you give more weight to and credibility to somebody that's typically a standing there telling you about it, or an expert who's properly qualified telling you about it, and then you just make your judgment. The old thing about everybody that doesn't like what they're doing tonight, raise their hand. That's really not very good evidence, and you shouldn't give much weight to that, honestly. You know, because zoning and these type matters aren't a popularity contest. I can tell you back when I did zonings in front of the county commission, I've been to some where 99 out of 100 people except my client were opposed to what we were doing, and I'm begging the county commission just to please follow the law and do what's right and not pay any attention to these 99 people out here screaming and hollering at you, okay? And they did a few times, thankfully. They did the right thing. We don't have too much of that, but that could happen occasionally. But anyway.
Okay, next slide. All your meetings are public meetings, and we're all required by state statutes by the Sunshine Law, which basically means we have to have public meetings. There has to be a recording. And what are the other requirements of Sunshine Law?
Notice,
yes. And minutes. And the other big key, it goes back to those ethical, is the conversations between board members, which you're not allowed to have, on issues that are going to be coming up.
I'm sure you all know that. That's probably the basic thing you don't want to ever do is to start getting into conversations or communications. You know, obviously email, all that stuff you don't want to do. If somebody posts something, don't respond to it. If it deals with an issue coming before you on Facebook or Twitter or all these other things that I stay away from, honestly, because I just don't want to do them. You know.
And if you ever, in today's world of emails, and that's something we need to talk about, because the thing that was brought up is it saying that we should have city emails. I don't, that they were talking about that so that they can maintain them for public records requests. But more importantly, if you ever do get an email from anybody related to an item that's going to come before or an issue, hey, just want to let you know I'm for or against it, or I want to give you some information, don't respond to it and send it on to us.
You need to forward it to the city, because actually your any public business you conduct over your cell phones should be subject to the public records. It is subject to the public records law. And if I'm you, I would, and some cities give everybody on boards cell phones that they're supposed to use just for business of the city. We don't do that. I don't know that we don't give the city council ones either, do we, Danielle? No. We do give them iPads to use or whatever. But all of those conversations on your cell phones, any of your devices, are subject to the public records law. You've got to hold on to them, and you've got to disclose them if asked and so forth. A better practice is to get them to the city. That way they're archived with the city and they can be, you know, they can be brought up and found. So that's the better way to handle it. It's obviously, telephone calls is that's not really verbal, and you're certainly not recording telephone calls. That's illegal without the permission or at least the giving notice to the other side in a conversation. You can't record people. I know people do that sometimes. I have had clients who have done it, and I've had to admonish them that I don't want to hear about that again, and I don't want to see that again, and because that's illegal in Florida. It's not illegal everywhere, but it is in Florida. Absolutely a crime to do that.
And you are allowed to call me or any staff member if you have a question about something that's coming up. That's allowed. But you can't then say to me or Danielle or Jim, say, can you find out what, you know, what another board member feels about that? Or can you tell the other board member about that? Basically, that, and the city council can't do it either on issues. You can't use us as a vehicle for sunshine.
The word in the case law is conduit. You can't use somebody else as a conduit to funnel ideas back and, you know. And people have gotten in trouble doing that too.
And my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, a planning and zoning board member can speak to a council member, because you're not on that board, but you can't speak to each other about an item.
That happens.
So,
yeah,
and that is allowed. Mm-hmm. But they can't talk to each other, but you can talk to them, because they're different boards.
And you can't be pulled by anybody. Staff can't pull you. I can't pull you. Danielle, she can't. And kind of going around seeing how each one, how you're going to do on an issue, you really aren't supposed to be pulled. Having discussions about viewpoints, maybe that's a little bit different, but you certainly, you know, you don't want to be pulled or allow yourself to be pulled by somebody trying to figure out how you're going to vote on something ahead of time. That's not appropriate either.
But unfortunately, there are sunshine law violations, and you can read about them all the time in various communities, and it's not pretty when they get taken up to Ethics Commission. All right, so part of our process is we always send out an agenda. We post our agenda in the front. Our agenda as well as city council, but before a meeting, we try to get them out on Thursday before your meeting, and we put the entire packet on the website, so it's viewed for anybody that would like to view it with the staff reports, et cetera. So that when you get it, we kind of have a process. We send it out to the board, which we email. I know that sometimes we try to give you packets, or some of you would rather have packets, but the board mentioned that they would rather, which does save us a lot of time and effort. But we'll do whatever you want, the email and it. But like we had a couple of weeks ago, we had site plans. We'll go ahead and deliver those out. But when we send out, we prepare the package. We send it out, email it to the board members. We post it on the website, and the agenda goes in the front. So, and you're supposed to stick to the items on the agenda. Obviously, there's sometimes something that comes up. Not as much for us, I think more so city council, and you can add it to the agenda. But a lot of our we are governed by both state statutes and city code on advertising deadlines and notice requirements. And I know I've worked with Jim a long time. If there's ever a question on a notice requirement, he'll say re-advertise, because that's the kind of stuff you can be challenged on. And a lot of communities are posting. So we have, and we're actually starting to look at next year's now. We go ahead and publish on our website for an entire year with our cutoff dates for all our various meetings, because I know now that if I need to get some from an applicant, if I need to get something approved because of a contract I might have, I want to get it done by March 1st, I need to get it to the city by this time, because we have to advertise 10 days in advance. It has to be an accredited day, but because the accredited day only comes out once a week, it's best to be 14 days. So we have to get it to them on the Monday before. So even though sometimes it takes 6 weeks to 8 weeks to get something through, it's not that we couldn't move it through, but we have statutory and notice requirements that have, you have to have these certain advertisements, and there has to be a certain amount of time in between. So that's why, like, I can tell you now that some of the items are going to be in your next month's agenda, because everything had to be in, because we have to advertise it next week, and the letters have to go out next week, so to meet our statutory requirements and city code requirements. And those are all minimums. Sometimes we've done more than that, but we have to meet the minimums and everything to move forward. Okay.
Can't give too much notice.
No.
Can't.
And
nobody can argue with that, I don't think.
And whenever our meetings, we always have action items. We'll start with the staff report presentation. My recommendation, and I think Jim, as much as we can, is you try to get the applicant to give their presentation if possible, and then you get public comment, which is a public hearing, open it, and many times we've opened it and there's nobody here, but then sometimes there are, and then you close the public hearing, and then it's on to board discussion, because then you can call somebody back up if you have a question for them, but it kind of keeps it flowing, and then from there you do your motion to either recommend to City Council if it's an ordinance, a rezoning, land use, or on the other hand, if it's a special exception or variance, is that you're actually the board making the decision. So, any questions? You look like you've got a question. Yep.
Yes. No.
Okay.
Could be that we've confused you too much, or we've given you plenty of knowledge.
Yeah.
Most of y'all know all of this
right.
stuff. We were doing some of this for Ed, and unfortunately Ed's not here.
Well, maybe I've listened to the text. Okay, so we have, as a staff, we have and as the city has, we have various tools of planning, and we're not unique in what we have. Every community has these. In the state of Florida, we are required by Chapter 163, and it's been since 1985, to adopt a comprehensive plan. There are certain required comprehensive plan elements that are required, land use, recreation, transportation, a utilities element, a capital improvements element, we're going to be looking at an optional element this year. We're going to be doing an economic development element. We just got funded for a grant, so we will be doing one, and it'll come before you on that one. In the past, the city had a historic preservation one, and they decided not to adopt it again because that's an optional element. And I think if I'm forgetting, I'm going through my transport, if I got them all, that are intergovernmental coordination, that's a required element. And the other requirement of statute is that you have a future land use map. There used to be a lot more requirements for both how often you can amend your plan and things like that, but the state statute has changed. But you have to have an adopted map, and that's your implementation tools. And then as part of Chapter 163 also is you have to have land development regulations that implement your comprehensive plan. And I always use kind of an umbrella. The comprehensive plan is like the umbrella, and underneath it is all your land development regulations and your zoning, and they all have to comply with your overall comprehensive plan. You can't have something that's in your you can't have anything in your zoning that would be in conflict with your comprehensive plan amendment or your comprehensive plan or the future land use map. So that's why a lot of times you'll see a land use and a zoning change, because they have to change the map, the land use zoning, and the map. One of the things that we've been doing in the recent changes is because when our comprehensive plan in Greentail Springs originally adopted, it was very almost like a zoning map. So you had a land use category and zoning and category, and they were the same. As we're looking at annexation, we've got larger developments like Reynolds Park, the energy code development. We've created mixed-use categories. So from a comprehensive plan status, the counties, for instance, a lot of the counties' land, they have like a rural fringe and urban fringe where you can do a lot, where there's various land zoning categories. Ours wasn't like it, so some of our newer land use categories are more these mixed-use categories, like mixed-use rental park is for Reynolds Park, but it allows residential, commercial, industrial in that one zoning code. They have to, in that one land use category, they have to come back with the zoning. So we have that, and all our zoning regulations are in Chapter 102 or a city code, and they all have permitted uses and uses by exceptions and then, you know, setback requirements, floor area ratios, et cetera, that all to implement the zoning. One of the special zoning, we talked about it a little bit last meeting because it came up, was what we call a PUD or Planned Unit Development. That is a zoning category specific for land use. And I gave you two on your dais. I had Micah print out two that have been adopted by the city, just to give you an idea so you can see the difference. In a nice way of saying, it's a little contract basically between a developer and the city council to say, this is what you will do. You can put more restrictions on it, bigger, larger buffers, limited uses, because if you change a zoning to X, whatever's allowed in X, whatever is allowed in, you know, can move forward. If you do a PUD and you say, I only want X, I don't want Y, Z that are allowed, and that would limit it. And the only way that it could change is to come by ordinance. And there, every PUD that we have in the city, I think we have about four, five, I don't know, are specific, have an ordinance that has to be passed, has to come to you as a PUD, and then has to go to council twice. And if you look at which one, I'll pick up the, there was one, 018-2003 is the Magnolia West one that was adopted back in 2003, and we are still using it today, because as long as anything happens at Magnolia West, they have to comply with the rules of this PUD, even though it was adopted by ordinance in 2003. And if they want to do anything different than what's in this PUD, they have to come back and apply for what we call a PUD-to-PUD rezoning, and it'll have to go through whatever changes are required. That happened, I think, at the development where Pyramid is. Originally, we're going to do it as town or as condos, and came back as townhouses. So it came back to rezoning. Also, Governor's Point, when they originally came, I think that was going to be townhouses, and then they switched it back to single family. So sometimes you have a plan, it doesn't. But what's the requirements of any PUD is that you have the ordinance, which is, and then part of that ordinance is the legal description that's required, which is one of the attachments, and then what we call a discussion, their written description, which goes into detail about what they're going to do for this particular property. We'll put in their, you know, setbacks. If it's a residential, we'll put uses, whatever is specific to this particular development. And then the last thing that's required is a site plan. So you have to put in there, if you were going to do a small commercial site, okay, this is where our buffer is going to be. This is how the building's going to be oriented. You can put architectural. I know Jackson, we were involved in one that there were certain design criteria, architectural characteristics that even a car wash had to comply with because it was in this PUD area. So, I mean, it's very specific or it can be more general. It depends. But anyways, this is one for Magnolia West. Here's another one we did for Water Oak Ridge this is Governor's Point, which was done in 2010. Again, a different one, but it just gives you an idea, and I just wanted you to look at what's required for any PUD, but you can see this is specific to a parcel of land. I was talking to somebody today who was looking at purchasing the land, and I basically said, you need to look at your PUD, because he says, well, you're only allowed to have 35 feet in the city. I said, no, not in that Governor's Point. You're allowed to go higher. So it was specific to them, and if you're developing that piece of property, you have to go by their PUD. The other rules of the code don't apply. It's what it's trumping it up.
Does the developer decide the name of the street?
If he, yes, yes. And we now, we, all our streets are approved by, and addresses are issued by the county's E-911. And after, I think it was after 9/11, the FEMA, or the Homeland Security, has very specific requirements for streets, how they come up with the names. And so they approve the street name, but the developer comes up with it. And in some communities, that's a difficult thing because you've got so many streets and you come up with, you know, a name that's, it can't be very close to another name. It used to be that that would be a problem. And what happened is when there were emergencies and they brought people in from other communities, they couldn't find where it was on a map. So they're now very specific. I remember we were doing the road for Magnolia Point Phase 8. Elk's Pass Lane, there was a big, I don't remember what they wanted, but it couldn't, they wanted something not Elk Pass Lane, mm-hmm. but whatever their point was, and I can't remember, I just remember we went back and forth again with the name that the county would accept that was met the Department of Homeland Security's requirements for a road. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, so it was kind of interesting, but yes, it was there. And the other things we have in our code are our landscape code, which you know because we just updated it about a year or so ago, signage requirements. All our code, any of our requirements are minimums. Everybody can go more, but you have to meet the minimum. Parking requirements are, as I mentioned, permitted uses. Uses by exception are specific uses that are allowed per each zoning district listed. So you can't just say, well, I want to do an X. Well, if it's not listed, you know, can I get a special exception? Well, if it's not listed as a special exception, we're not allowed to process that application because it has to be listed. You have to be specific. And then the various development standards, street size, width of roads, entrances, all that is in Chapter 98, is our what we call our development standards. And some of those.
And then, Chair, I would add to that list lighting.
Yes, which is, well, and we do, it's part of it, the part of the development standards is the lighting is mentioned. Underground utilities. If you notice, all our new developments have underground. That is a, that was adopted in the code back in 2000. Mm-hmm. And that is part of our development standards that we must meet, which is, you can see the difference in new and older developments. So. And I think that's the end of, because I guess, oh my God, 5:59, that's pretty close. I said about an hour. My God, we did good, Jim.
The
sidewalks, the sidewalks are totally up to the developer.
No, the sidewalks, you have to have a 6-foot sidewalk on one side
just
of the
on
street.
On one side.
That's in, yeah, that's in our code.
When was that code come out?
I think when it was updated in 11, they looked at it again. But I think
So that's one, not at Magnolia Point.
Yeah, obviously that was before Magnolia.
Okay.
Yeah,
so that was three,
it was like 2000. We put the requirements for sidewalk, and unfortunately, Magnolia Point came in from the county PUD, and some of those standards came in from what the county was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another issue that is what we call grandfathering in. If we change the code. And you're existing, as long as you maintain yourself and keep going, you are allowed to meet that code. A good example that's slowly changing is our sign ordinance. Is when we adopted our Gateway Corridors design standards back in 2006, 2007, we required monument signs. As every business goes out of business, 6 months after they go out of business, we tell them, code enforcement, you need to get that sign changed. And if you notice, slowly but surely, every new one coming down the pikes are now monument signs. It takes time because we can't, people have rights to, when code changes, they have right to have the uses that were there or the design standards, whatever was there before. But as we move forward, it changes. And it takes time, but that's as we redevelop sites and you're seeing in these new sites, it's just going to be a different look to our city than it was previous developments over 20 years ago.
Also, Madam Chair, I would add to the question about Mad Point curb and gutter.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So you wouldn't have streets like that without curb and gutter.
No.
So, you know, that's
good. The state also takes preempts. You've heard that, especially in this last legislative session, where the state has just taken things away from us that we used to control. it goes on every legislative session. This past one was especially bad, but they've done some things now on signage. I want to say it was signage relative to gasoline stations and things of that sort, limiting our ability to regulate the signs of their size of their signs in terms of the placement of their signs and so forth. Just things like that. I mean, you know,
the state regulates it now.
Yeah, they limit what we can do. They do it all the time. It's just that's just one example I can think of right now. They did that in the last legislative session. I doubt it's come up. We haven't had had to even think about a service station coming in.
And we've got also there's federal law. I mean, the Supreme Court came down with a ruling related to signage, related to what you can allow or not allow on the signage. We really can't say. I mean, Jim and I both listened to webinars and training.
Just got to be. Yeah, signage. If you're content neutral on signage regulations, you're probably fairly safe. You get into regulating what says on the sign, that's where you get into problems, and it's pretty doggone complicated. Like I said, Janice and I went through a 1-hour seminar, webinar, I guess it was, and you know, I mean, you hear what they say and all, but it's still the law is evolving and more. It depends on the project that's involved as to whether or not somebody challenged you or not. You know. We have things on the books. I'm positive if a team of lawyers, you know, chose to jump on them, they can probably find some issues with them, and they could in any town, and they do it, and it's done every day in every big town, I guess. Like she was saying, the bigger the town, the more litigation, the more challenges you're going to have to all of this sort of stuff. And we, as staff, Danielle, myself, Janice, everybody probably on staff, all department heads, continue to try to educate ourselves, you know, more and more, and try to stay up with things. It's just there are a lot of issues in municipal law. If anybody knows it, Danielle knows that. Running a municipality and all of the issues involved in it are no different than running New York City is running Green Coast Springs, except I think we're more complicated because I'm not sure New York has all the utilities that Green Coast Springs has. You know, I mean, it really is. I mean, it really, really is. I've said to the city council many times that, you know, they're having to wear a hat of a utility director of sewer today, and then later in the night, the utility directors of a water, and then the reuse, and then the electric, and then the garbage, and then, you know, streets, and then police, and then, you know, find me another city council that has to do all of that. I'd like to know who it is. And it can't be another town our size that has all of those different elements to running the government. You know, there can't be another town like this. Can't be.
And we, I know Danielle has to take a certain amount of ethics and law training. I have to, as her as a city manager and myself to keep my AICP, Jim has to keep it. And then we're always getting emails from our planning, you know, I get it from my APA planning organization that kind of keep us up and you kind of watch what's happening to other communities. I got a phone call, I hadn't even, like, on the medical marijuana, you know, that's the hot topic. There are attorneys, this guy called me the other day and just said, okay, you still got your moratorium? I said, yep, no, and I said, May 18th, I looked at the date. He said, okay, I'll write it down. I guess I'll give you a call in March. You know, he's an attorney, and he said he identified himself as a cannibalist attorney. And sure enough, I looked his name on his website. That's what he did. And so, you know, but these are things that are going to big issues, but there's a lot of money involved, so we have to kind of watch it. And that's why we have to be open and make sure that we, you know, our goal is to protect the city, protect you as board members and the council on what we do. So.
And the timing of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all will be making a recommendation to the city council on medical marijuana, whether to recommend a ban or recommend to put it in the zone that the state tells us we have to put it in with pharmacies and very few other regulations can you put on it other than what you might put on a pharmacy. I know Orange Park's addressed it in a little bit of a different way by saying, you know, we'll let it go where pharmacies go, but we're going to put pharmacies in some other zones that, you know, that get them away from maybe the main corridors or something. You know, I don't know that really...
I think at the end of the day that it will end up in pharmacies.
But now you have pharmacies and grocery stores and you know, everywhere else. I mean.
Well, they have to have a prescription. Is that correct?
Oh, sure. Oh, no.
They've got to go take it to a pharmacy.
It's heavily regulated. And you know, you can buy all that stuff. They can deliver it to your house.
Yeah. Regardless philosophically how you feel about it. Right. And I think it's easier if they just figure it out with the pharmacy.
And let them.
That also is a good example of the difference between legislative decisions and what we call the quasi-judicial, which we've been talking about, the zoning and all that, typically that is. But legislative decisions like that one isn't a quasi-judicial hearing, and so you don't have necessarily the same notice and all that other requirements. You do have notices of your meeting and everything, but it's, the notices are a little bit different. We tend to treat them all the same way. We let everybody speak and all that sort of stuff. So it's really been a big difference. The law has a little difference in the way it looks at it as all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and as we said, I went to a seminar, government all-day seminar in May of this year, and I'd given it to Janice because there was a large section here on planning and zoning and a lot of the same stuff we're talking about right now. And it's probably more than you want to see. It's not that thick, but I may, if you're interested, I'll photo some of that for you and send it to you as well. But it kind of restates what we've said today. A little bit more detail, probably more than you want in some areas and maybe not enough in others, but I'm happy to send that to you. It doesn't cost anything to do that. So if you'd like, I'll send that to you or have Janice do it.
Actually, the only one that actually stayed the whole time was Miss the chair. Yeah, it was a hurricane. It was a bad week. But this training, Mr. Bowles is going to be doing it through the Navy. He's got a contract with the League Association for Accounting. And so I had to ask him when he's going to be up in this area to let me know so we can offer it again. But, you know.
Going to other planning and zoning boards, whether it be the county, Orange Park, whoever, Jacksonville, I don't know if you'd want to go up there to one. It might not be much of an education up there, but never hurts. I've done that. As I was learning to practice law, and even still now, I'll sit in on other things and other trials and just watch the way other people do things. And, you know, it's interesting to go over and watch the code enforcement with the county. Everybody patterned it after us, so we're all collectively proud of that. We started a lot of things, actually, Green Cove has in the county.
Excuse me, is this tools of planning right there with these bullet points in here somewhere?
No, I kind of created this presentation from our code. These are things that are in our code, but they're in there. They talked about it. They didn't get into as much what we call current planning, which is the development review type guidelines. Their session was more comprehensive planning, and the meetings and things like that. But read your book, look through it. I mean, it's going to take you some time, but just and then it. You know, we always have at every meeting board discussion and board comments. So if you read something that doesn't make sense, or you, I know we've talked, Ms. Francis brought up something about the idea that maybe, you know, some other communities make you take an oath of office. I mean, that would be something the council would have to decide. But, you know, that might be something, you know, as collectively you'd like to move on. But whatever. Just read the book, and if you see anything that we need to go into more detail, you have any questions, just let us know. We can add it to the agenda again or whatever works for you.
Janice, me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you email us this page?
Yeah, it should be in your PowerPoint that you should have gotten.
Yeah, that is the PowerPoint.
Yeah, that's
a... Did you not have a copy?
We'll get it to you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And this would have came where? Email?
It was in your packet? Yeah.
I just gave you a hard copy of what's up
right
here.
Yeah, she gave me a hard copy.
Oh, just what was up there?
Yep. Yeah.
But I can't stress enough.
And that's good. Yeah.
Free to call us.
I don't remember seeing that.
Okay. I just want to thank Jen and Jim for the presentation. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it was very enlightening. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Board discussion. Do we have anything?
Who's going to win the game? Should we take a vote?
Yeah.
It would be non-binding.
Oh, non-binding. Yeah. That's.
Yeah. I don't know. Doesn't look good.
Well,
last meeting, meeting before last, I said that I might have to pull out because of, but they've got everything under control with medication. So I told Pam, if she'd been talking to people, trying to get a replacement, and I said, if you want me to stay, I can stay now. But if you want a new person, new blood, there's no problem. Because I've been here.
So you can stay beyond December then, is that it?
I will stay until her term is over.
Okay, excellent.
Because they finally got the inconsistent blood pressures going all over the place.
Oh, wow.
Heartbeat going from 64 to 128.
Oh, God, I've been there.
Did you change doctors?
I bet.
Just switched the medications around. And
good.
That's awesome news, and we definitely want
to stay. Yeah, because that's Pam's decision, so I mean, but I gave her and she said she'd been talking to people. I said, look, if you got somebody in your mind, don't worry about it.
We'll find it.
So.
Any other board discussion?
I did last meeting. Was not here because the meeting was postponed a week, and I'd already had plans for dental surgery, so I wasn't able to come, but otherwise.
Well, those things come up, don't they?
It was already pre-scheduled, so.
I don't have anything, but I would like to say that I think that we have the best support staff ever, and you guys do an outstanding job, and you make our lives so much easier.
We
want to take our hats off to all of you for doing such an outstanding job. And to my constituents, you guys make my position easier, and I want to thank you for that, for your support in this, my new.
The chair. You're the chair.
Thank you.
I always thought that was so funny.
Well,
yeah.
The chair. The fire wasn't quite as hot.
Right. But maybe he's not.
You
want to say thank you.
Well, it's nice to have you.
And welcome to Micah, and you've done an excellent job as well. So we're glad to have you. Staff comments.
Just one thing as we think ahead into 2018, which will be here before we know it. Well, first of all, your meeting in November is November 16th, and we will have some items, so you will definitely have it. That meeting we will have.
That's
Thanksgiving, because your normal fourth Thursday would be Thanksgiving. That is, you know, we're obviously closed. We needed to change it. The other one is sometimes we've had a December meeting, and sometimes we've not. The normal one would be the fourth one, which I think would be around the Christmas, but we could have one December 14th, which is, I think, the third. If we have any items come before you.
Is the fourth Thursday the 21st?
Yes, the 21st, which usually is hard to get a quorum. It's up to y'all. We've changed that one at various times.
In December, this says fourth Thursday is the 28th, which is the last Thursday.
Oh, yeah, you're right. So the first, it would be the 28th. So really, it's up to you.
That's the weekend between Christmas and New Year's, and that everybody takes off that.
Yeah. That's why we usually bump it back to the before Christmas. We usually bump it back to before Christmas to the December 14th meeting, because it's usually hard to get people even the 21st or the 28th.
Right.
Look at your calendars. Right, we only have December 5th. So it's really, that's kind of, sometimes we've even bumped it because no items can come to council after in December until they go to January. So we could potentially, I think the 14th would probably be a break, and hopefully we can get a quorum. So if that works, and actually we do have a PUD that will be coming for that housing, for that, not the one you, another one. That you and I talked about. So anyway, so if that works, if you can look at your schedule, or Michael will send you next week an email just to see if everybody will be around in December. And the other issue we can talk about at your next meeting, we've talked about, Jim and I have talked about it, is we've always had our meetings on Thursday, but a lot of times people go out of town and whatever. I could not find anything in the code, the city charter that requires that, is if Tuesday, the fourth Tuesday would be better for the board. So don't need to make a decision today, but if that works better, it might be working for everybody, because a lot of times people go out of town on Thursday for the weekend, so while Tuesday is kind of, you're usually back if you went out of town and you haven't left yet, so whatever, but that could be, and sometimes that will help us with allowing things to move a little bit quicker to council sometimes, because even though agenda items are due Tuesday, but if there was a big issue we wanted to move before, we could, you know, maybe you could vote on something on Tuesday. It could help a little bit every once in a while, and depending on how the weeks fall. So that's something to think about, and we can discuss it at your next, I mean, I'd rather have all, you know, even Mr. Gaw be here. He will be at the next meeting. He was out of town this week, or I think he's been out of town. Very busy since the hurricane and recouping up for wherever his all his properties and things are. So
I have a question.
Yeah,
are we still? The county, I know this is in the city. What is that, right before the Black Creek Bridge, what are they developing? Is that going to be housing? Is it to be condos?
We're around where the Girl Scout camp is. Black Creek Village. It's kind of a mixed-use development. There's some residential. There's a commercial component of it.
Really?
Yeah, we are the providers of the water and sewer.
Oh, we are. Okay.
Yes. That's the end of our water and sewer area.
Yeah.
That's it. What?
As well as electric.
Yes. Yeah.
So they are going to be some things on the water, facing the water.
Yes. Yes, I think there's some housing, there's some restaurant, if I remember the plan. I haven't looked at it.
I talked to someone about that recently, and they quoted 70-ish homes and a marina, which I was surprised about the marina, because I always heard that was a fancy protective zone there, and that nothing like a marina or anything could be built, but I guess maybe there's...
As long as you have a
good weight, though. Yeah. Yeah. Because the Girl Scout camp has one.
What about the Girl Scout camp in there? Is that...
That's
just going to...
Yeah, that's a camp.
It's going to be the same?
Yeah.
They're not doing anything about that one.
Mm-mm. No, that's a camp. Yeah, the camp, that's owned by the county. That's county park. They bought it with Florida Community Trust.
This is just in front of it.
Right.
Yeah. Part of the creek.
Well, and also down 17, right?
Yeah.
Facing 17, they cleared all
that.
If you make a ride on 209, you're getting into Edgewater Lane. Now, those houses are already under construction.
Yeah, they...
We're the water and sewer provider there as well, and we play well.
Mm-hmm. And there's probably already
those are the
about...
ones on the railroad track.
Yes.
And they're also...
I always laugh every time I go by there. I'm like, really?
Some of them are also billeted as waterfront homes because there's an access to
a creek or something.
Bayers Creek or something that
uh-huh.
you can get
there is,
out. I have no idea how deep the creek is, but they say you can launch a boat. So there you go.
A little tiny one.
Yeah.
Back in the back there for the recreation, they have a little caboose. It's called Green Coast Springs Railway Caboose or something. A little caboose and swing sets and things.
Yeah.
It's a nice little place back there.
Yeah.
How many times does the train, I always think, how many times does the train go through there one day?
I haven't heard the train as much lately as I used to. Not as many times during the day or night.
Really?
It seems like it slowed down.
I'm thinking it's got to be at least five. Amtrak twice going up
and
down.
Yeah.
If we get
slower
at least twice a day, that's
but the engineers must retire.
And then I hear them early in the morning, Porsche.
Yes.
And 10-ish at night. So that's five.
It seems like it slowed down some. So.
But it's so close. It's just... Oh, well.
Yeah.
I just want to thank the city again for all the work that the city workers put out to clean up the town. And it's, some people say, well, it took too long. But if you look at the damage, the amount of trash, you can't just look at your own place. You have to look at citywide, statewide, and countrywide, because with Texas and Puerto Rico and Louisiana and us getting walloped, the way we got walloped.
Mm-hmm.
I think our city people did an extraordinary job. And
they're taking a donation there.
It has been shared with all. And actually, we're on our second pass for debris removal, and we actually spent last week in Haldeman County.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sent some of our trucks and crews out to help. So,
is it November the 8th? They're having the lunch. They're having a special luncheon to honor them.
We are honored, recognizing the key sponsor, which is the Elks Club. And then we are having little signs, like real estate signs, for like the Spurrier family or the Lewis or whatever. And we'll have those.
Are you dropping hints there?
I mean, it's we're not tagged out yet. So,
For the city employees.
They're having a luncheon at the cookout and a grill thing at the big shelter there, the one to the right of the pool, and it's running from 11:30 to 2, and the employees, including City Hall, because we worked, will just come in waves for their lunch. They'll get up and leave their desk and enjoy lunch and come back, and then the next folks will come, and we all can't get up and leave at the same time, and so it's a fish fry and a barbecue chicken with fixins and...
If you want to make a donation, it's just an appreciation thing.
Because
they did work hard.
The mayor wanted the funds for the event to come from the community.
We did have a notice on our church board.
That would be people contributing.
Whoever wants to donate.
The we're keeping track of them, and then we're going to pay the... a proprietor who's putting together all the food and the arrangements and the plates. I mean, the idea is that the employees don't have to do anything other than just show up.
That sounds for change. Is there anything else?
I'm going to faint if somebody doesn't mention all the new construction and all that's going on, because generally, it's one of y'all that bring it up. I never bring it up.
I don't have to.
But I'm thinking,
in the city,
surely they're going to talk about it. Surely Sarah's going to bring up, my God, have you seen Ace Hardware demolished?
Well,
you didn't do it.
Well, I see.
I don't
want
to put on a meeting. I was waiting for one of y'all to do that.
Yeah. How about Burger King?
We got Burger King site plan. The Sheik is coming.
When is he going to? Yeah, every time I pass there, I say nothing's happening.
They submitted the site plan, so you'll see it at your next meeting.
Good.
So we're moving.
And then you've got Energy Code, Heritage Signs, those two coming to you next.
And then, but we've got the Doug Burnett bought the old Chinese space, restaurant, and he's in South, and he submitted a sign, but it's going to be the Sheik. They're going to move. They're going to have one there, and then we've got
just a different name.
Right, the Mediterranean.
Yes.
The same stuff in Orange Park.
Yes. Mush opened his Mush Armenian on Idlewild. Yeah, and from what I'm hearing for girls here that have bought it, it's the food is very good, Mediterranean. And he's busy. So we got an application today for the old cousin site. Charlie Southern Bistro coming in, so things are happening.
Good.
Yes. So.
Yeah. There's new restaurants. It's a good thing.
Yes, exactly. So, anyways.
All right. If there's no other discussion, this meeting is adjourned at 6:25 p.m.
Judge Valencia, I wrote myself a note. See any?